Thank you very much, Andre. This is Natalie. I would first like to apologize for the roll call as my laptop has just crashed, so I have no visibility on the most recently arrived participants. They will be noted for attendance later. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the PPSIA Working Group call on the 18th of November 2014. On the call today, we have Steve Metallis, Chris Pelling, Christian Dawson, Don Blumenthal, Richard Leaning, Theo Goetz, Kathy Kleiman, Frank Mischlich, James Liddell, Alex Deacon, Michaela Nalen, Griffin Barnett, and Jim Bykoff. We have apologies from Holly Raish, Sarah Wilde, Osvaldo Navoa, and Phil Corning. And from staff, we have Mary Wong, Amy Rivens, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Don.
Okay. Appreciate it. And I apologize for the admin stuff happening here in the background. I will send this final text and proceed. Okay, welcome. We are, well, maybe not in the home stretch, but in the next home stretch, which is kind of nice. We forged through lost some time, but I think we've made some time up. So we're close to on schedule. We're close to the schedule than that we'd set out initially, which was really a very ambitious schedule, as I and a few other people have and staff have said before. We just regained some more time. Mary left a slot here on the agenda for me to give a, where we are, where we're going. But to be honest, Mary, you did a real good job of that in your email that had the documents. We've gone through the initial questions, gone through A through G, and now it's time to go back through to see if we're if we still think the way we did early on. I think we've all learned a lot as we've gone along that may reflect on some thoughts from way back when. We'll go back through over the next few weeks. I'm sure we will spend some specific time on F again. And then who knows, we may have to revisit some of the other topics in depth, maybe even a little more depth than we dealt with them to begin with. I think that the next 3 weeks is going to be for this review. And then we'll start writing. James?
Hi, Don. Thanks. James speaking. So not really a matter of substance, but just wanted to jump on item number one and an update to SOI and inform the group that during the last council meeting, I was confirmed as a council liaison to this particular PVP. I believe that's replacing Mia Farrell. I don't know if she's on the call, but I just wanted to make that announcement as part of the SOI update.
Lovely. The one time I skipped the item, no, I appreciate it. I didn't realize Maria was dropping that role.
I believe she was term limited.
Off council. Okay. All right. Okay, appreciate it. So with that... Mary sent out a few documents. There's a table that does a real nice job of condensing our status or our conclusions. That covers everything. The focus for A to E that pulls out the preliminary conclusions. And then the Appendix H to the EWG final report. that has a lot of good substance that we can draw from as we go forward. A to E, pointing out A to E was deliberate for two reasons. We won't get to F and G very quickly. And we may be wrong, but I think the thought was that we will get through A to E relatively quickly in the review, but need extra time for F. And maybe G will go quickly again. It did the first time through. excuse me. I will point out that we had on the schedule that came out that we sent it a few weeks ago, we had briefing or discussions, I forget what we called them, with DPA and with law enforcement. We talked last week about how the DPA just couldn't work out because of timing. And the administrative stuff I was handling just now is Dick Greening from Europol is on the call. He's joined us on to represent law enforcement. And at this point, I think where we are is that he will kind of gauge how things go and jump in where he thinks it's appropriate, rather than just do a formal law enforcement catch-up session. And I just want to give Dick a chance to make sure I got that right.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. I think that's the best way to deal with it, is instead of me boring you with a half-hour talk, is as and when I feel that I can contribute or you have any direct questions regarding where you would like an opinion from law enforcement, I can do that. And obviously, I've now been spending the last couple of weeks trying to catch up, so I'll be a bit more active on the email as well, so I can use that fora to answer any questions and put up our views forward. I hope that's really clear and understood by everyone.
I appreciate it. Yeah, definitely, and that's kind of way I understood it from our background. but I've been in enough sessions with you that half hour certainly would not be boring. At least I'll assure you of that. Always entertaining.
Thank you.
Okay.
Don, are you there?
Yes. I kind of leaned on my mute button by accident.
Okay, just checking.
Okay, fair. No, I appreciate it. I would have kept yakking for another 20 minutes before I woke up. We've got the table on the screen here. I would suggest if anybody... Griffin, is that no audio at all, or just during my dead time? The table is a good shorthand to work from, but I'd also suggest do we have a sound problem? I'm seeing a few.
Don, this is Mary. I don't know if we're having a sound problem in Adobe Connect. If folks who are only using audio in Adobe could quickly type in to let us know, because many of us are on the conference bridge, and I don't believe there's audio problems on the conference bridge. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. I didn't want to wander on. If we were having problems, take a minute to get them straightened away. So if it would probably be good if we could to work from both documents, and I guess the question is which is better on the screen, the full preliminary conclusions of the table. My thought is we might do better with the preliminary conclusions so we can see what we've written up more formally. Yeah, appreciate it. So let's just go through. Or, because these came out yesterday, we've had them for a while, but I don't know how much folks have gone back, or remember going back, for example, a couple weeks ago when we sent this out. Has anybody gone through this document or the table and spotted something that does not look right? Or that we're going to have to flag issues on, even if the conclusion is correct. I'll give you an example. When I was looking at the table, I noticed a point about proxy privacy providers would have to be identified. Now, if I remember right, maybe I don't. Did we have a discussion about whether that would involve changing items in the WHOIS record, or was that going to be identified as part of the name of the provider? I just want to. We may have to do some clarifications as we go along. So let me stop yakking at least for a second and see if anybody has any thoughts or comments on specific items or on what I just said, or do we just start forging through piece by piece? Mary?
Thanks, Don. This is Mary Wong from SCAF. Just two things, Don. The first is a follow-up to the comment you just made, and I was wondering if you were referring to the B1 question of clearly labeling WHOIS entries, or if you're referring to a different one. The second comment I had was that in relation to this table, it's 95% the same as the one that working group members would have seen in Los Angeles, but there has been one update, and that is for Category E, I believe, which is the one on Relay, and we have not it as still under discussion, but what we thought would be helpful, since we're starting to go through this set of conclusions, was to add to Category E what is still under discussion, as in the follow-up actions for electronic communications, which I think the language was last discussed on a call a few weeks ago. So just in case folks have not looked at this and are working off the LA document, I wanted to make that clarification. Thanks.
Great, thanks. I was referring to B. Okay, I will take James' advice and let's dive in. A2, we decided that proxy and privacy should be treated the same in accreditation. Is there any disagreement with that? Okay, I like this. Did we scroll to B1? Oh, we've got control. That's right. I see the scroll thing here. Okay, there's the issue of labeling WHOIS entries. I guess the question is. Is what we have here in the way of discussion sufficient to cover the different possibilities? I mean, it strikes me that the cleanest way to do it would be to have a specific field. But again, that gets into areas that are arguably, well, not arguably, that gets into areas that are beyond our scope, I think it's fair to say. Any comments on what's here? James.
Hi, Don. James speaking for the transcript. And I'm curious, I mean, I agree with you that changing the structure of the Who Is record is probably the cleanest way to identify a privacy proxy service. I guess my question is why we feel that's outside of our scope. ICANN has, in the past, or in the latest RAA, has included a specification that very, you know, much to the chagrin of registrars, very tightly controls what WHOIS output is supposed to look like, and it seems like it would certainly be within the remit of any consensus policy to make changes to that. So I guess I'm just wondering why we felt like, and if this was something that was decided when I was missing a bunch of calls there a couple weeks ago, I apologize if I'm reopening an old conversation.
I appreciate that, Norm. This is a very old conversation. It's from the early days. And maybe I'm mischaracterizing what I'd heard back then. I had thought that the feeling was that there would be a problem with having this group say that there should be an addition to the output on the WHOIS records. Well, let me ask you what your reaction would be to doing that.
Well, I saw Steve jumped in, but just to respond quickly, there is a field, for example, that was added in the 2013 RAA to identify resellers if a reseller is present. And I think that you know, is probably an analog to what we're trying to accomplish here. I don't want to bog us down here, but I wanted to understand exactly why we decided that this was not the path we wanted to go. Thanks.
No, I don't know if we decided that, or it's just a faulty memory recollection of the conversation, or it was said, and whatever.
Yeah, this is Steve Metallitz. I think what we have in the preliminary conclusion is an example, we say this should be left to implementation, how this is actually done. And we give an example that I think would not require any change in the fields. It would just say you have to enter certain magic words in the field about registrant, and that would make it clear that this was a proxy or privacy registration. But there certainly could be other ways of doing this. We're not ruling those out. I guess my main question would be about timing, and whether I don't know whether ICANN has the capability or the authority, I should say, to, you know, add an additional field to the mandatory format of who is that's been established under the 2013 RAA and now in the registry agreements, and expanding that to the legacy GTLD. So I'm not sure if it can simply do that as an implementation matter. I would think so, but if not, then that could be a source of delay. So that would be my only concern about this. I think the way we have it here, where we make one suggestion about how it could be done, is probably appropriate, and then there may be better ways to do it that will be brought out in implementation. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. I think James just suggested that we could do it. I don't hear any disagreement with the idea that there should be some kind of label. I guess as we when we're writing, we can look at it and And see exactly how to word it, whether we want to make a specific recommendation or suggestions. And again, I think they'll be partly deciding whether this is an implementation or policy issue. Now, from the way James just described it, I have a feeling that if it's to be I have the feeling that if the route is to add a field, that's going to have to come from us as a requirement rather than a suggestion, but that's more for the, but I would have to defer to people who are more familiar with the process than I am. But we can come back to that in the writing stage. Yes, and as Mary mentioned, we have some issues that we're going to have to come back to. Mentioned in the chat. We'll have to come back to some issues that we decided not to follow. Would be our best address later. Kathy?
Hi, all. Thanks, Don. I think it's an interesting idea. I don't remember talking about it earlier, adding a new field to actively identify proxy privacy providers. If I missed that, I apologize. Is this something, question to you, Don, question to James, is this something that we can give to maybe the group, which includes me and James, looking at some of the technical transfer issues? Seems like a really good technical question and one with an up or down answer. Can we add a field easily? Is there any problem to adding a field? Are there any technical implications to adding a field? It seems like one that should have some pretty easy or at least some pretty clear answers that the working group might want. And so maybe we should send it off to kind of a subgroup and come back with the answers on this. Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate it. James said, and I wasn't aware. Okay, James, let you answer that.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Don.
No, you've got more experience, I guess. I was going to mention your reference to retailers.
Oh, I just wanted to agree with Kathy. It's a good idea. I think it might, personally, I think it might have some value to identifying, I represent a very recognizable privacy proxy service that has a brand that identifies it as such. But there's probably a number of, more obscure or other companies that are perhaps providing this function that are not doing so in a transparent manner. So I think that there's value to doing this in Whois as a separate record. I have to think a little bit about how I don't believe it's a change to the protocol. I think it's more of just a structuring of the output the way we see in the RAA specification on this. So it's just something to look into in that regard. But I would be happy with taking this offline with Kathy if that's the desired approach.
That sounds great. Always happy to hear from volunteers. Susan?
So I can confirm that you can easily add a field to the current protocol because we looked at that extensively in the EWG. So Scott Hollenbeck always talked about how flexible it was. So that's definitely a possibility. The other thing is I'm sort of wondering, do we need to add a field? Couldn't we just require an identifier of some sort in the registrant column where, for James's example, domains by proxy is pretty recognizable, but for those proxies that are going forward would be accredited, would we maybe, it's XYZ proxy and then some sort of identifier in the registrant field, and then, you know, then you wouldn't need to necessarily add a field and change much, but just the requirement, the policy, to add that identifier.
Well, I think that's, yes. I mean, I think that's one option that, that we've got in our active in the discussion. Just the question is what's the cleanest, easiest to identify. James?
Just to respond, Susan, yeah, that's probably one of the easier ways to do it. Is I think that's the example that we gave in our preliminary recommendation. My only thought here is that that's going to put us back in this dynamic where the good guys are going to include that required information as part of the registrant field, and then the folks that we're actually building all these policies around to govern won't. And so it's just kind of, you know, that whole same dynamic that we're always in, where the folks who are already playing by the rules will comply, and the folks who aren't will skirt around it. It's just a concern. I'm probably making some generalist statements now. Thanks.
Thanks. Stephanie?
This whole question raises an issue that I'm not sure is within our mandate, but if it isn't, then it should be, it seems to me. And that is, are we going to deal with the information that a proxy privacy service provider must provide to their clients in order to be accredited? So there's a basic consumer protection issue here in how well does a registrar explain to its customers exactly what they're buying when they get the privacy proxy service and how far their protection goes. And just in the looking around that I've done, I would say that it's all over the map. So this is beyond the question of whether you can add a field or not. It's how safe is the transfer? How safe is this for the consumer? Is that within our mandate?
No, I think it's part of protecting privacy. I don't see where it fits in with what we're discussing here.
Oh,
James and Kathy did look at issues concerning transfer.
Right. And this is a much broader question, but it'll affect every category, as far as I can see. Anyway, carry on.
Thanks. McKaylee?
Thanks. I'm not quite sure I really understand Stephanie's issue with this. It might help if you were to expand a little. You know, as James and others have said, you know, adding extra fields, flags, data, markers, labels, whatever term you're comfortable with, to the who is or whatever replaces it in order to flag a domain name as using a particular type of service shouldn't be overly problematic. Now, there are potential impacts, I suppose, with respect to domain transfers, but one could, in theory, now I have no idea what the practical implications of this are, and I think if we're going to go down this route, we really do need to look at the cost-benefit aspect of it. You know, there's going to be a cost to making changes to Whois output, and one could also make certain changes to EPP responses or something so that people could know that, you know, this domain name is using X, therefore you need to do Y rather than Z. But if any changes being proposed to Whois or anything else are being made, there should be a cost-benefit analysis done on that. Thanks.
Thanks, McKaylee. I know we had mentioned EPP back when we were talking about this issue. Now, as I was scrolling down to refresh myself on where we had talked about some of the issues that Stephanie raised, and as Steve mentioned in chat, when we get to B3, we're going to kind of hit them head on. And if Steve, if I didn't just now, you said what you were going to say, dive in.
Thank you. Yes, I was going to say that, but also to say, just to get back to B1, I'm fine with leaving it as it is and asking if James and Kathy take a look at this and have another suggestion or want to add a suggestion about adding a field and can come back to us in the next week or two with that, I'm fine with looking at that then. So, I mean, I'm comfortable with having them take a further look at this if that's what they want to do. If that group is volunteering to do that, let's put it this way. Thanks.
Agreed. Thanks. James, and then let's move on to B2.
Sorry, I'll be brief, and maybe this is more appropriate for a conversation between Kathy and I, but just the difference here being if we add another field, then that data is submitted by the registrar, typically, or relayed. But if the registrant field would be submitted by the privacy proxy service, and the reason that matters is because the privacy proxy service might not be affiliated with the registrar, or the registrar might not be aware that they're dealing with a privacy proxy service not affiliated with them. So I think that that's one of the questions that this issue will actually suss out, is the way we choose to go here will determine, how much awareness and visibility registrars have when non-affiliated privacy proxy services are using are registering domain names. So, but I'll just pin that, and then Kathy and I will take that offline. Thanks.
I appreciate your bringing that up, James. It's one of the issues I've had in mind as we've when I was pushing so hard to try to find a non-affiliated privacy proxy. That's one of the examples I was thinking of in terms of how things will work differently in a practical sense. Moving on to B2.
I'm sorry, this is Paul. I'm not on the Adobe, so I don't know how to get in the queue.
You just did.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to volunteer to be on the chat with Kathy and James on this issue.
Excellent. Appreciate it. No, as I said, no volunteer rejected at any point in our discussions. Thanks, Paul. Going on to B2, I think our discussion on that was fairly straightforward. And then we came to a consensus that proxy privacy providers should have responsibilities similar to what's in the 2013 RAA concerning accuracy of contact information that they gather. Obviously, there'll be compliance issues because nobody can look at the data behind the system, behind the their information. But at least to begin with, are we still in agreement that there should be processes for information verification? Okay. And let's move on to B3. And I don't think this one is going to go as quickly based on 5 minutes ago. Wait a minute, did I scroll too fast? Yes, I scrolled right by B3. No wonder I confused myself. Uh, Now, Stephanie, or anybody else, you know, I think we did talk fairly clearly about actually privacy providers having to lay out documents, terms of service, whatever you want to call it, concerning rights, responsibilities, obligations, just cribbing from what's on the page here. I'll stop, Steve.
Yeah, this is Steve. I think it's just worth noting that, and I'm not sure that our preliminary conclusion does, that the status quo now for those services that are covered by the interim specification to the 2013 RAA is that they have to publish these terms of service, and that doesn't exactly line up with rights, responsibilities, and obligations, but there's certainly a lot of overlap. So that's kind of the baseline, and we might want to reference that, and if we want to expand that obligation or require service providers to tell their customers something more than what they make public as far as those terms of service, then this would be the place to do it. I don't have a specific suggestion in mind there, but just to say that we probably, in our preliminary conclusion, should reference the interim specification and what it requires to be published in this area. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, good point. In addition to Appendix H from EWG, there's language we can... We should remember the interim spec. Might be worth sending that around as a reminder, although we said it before, but it might be worthwhile doing it again. Kathy?
Let's see. So I'm confused, I guess, by Steve's comment about terms of service. I like using the term the registration agreements here. I think of terms, maybe I'm mixing things up, but I think of terms of service as the registrar terms of service. And if we're talking about the terms of service for the proxy privacy provider, maybe we could come up with a different term or just call it P/P or TOS or something like that. But in this case, I thought now that we've, as I look at the bullet points, particularly the one that says all proxy privacy service registration agreements must state the customer's rights and responsibilities and the P/P services obligations in managing those rights and responsibilities, it seems like a good time to clarify. I don't think we have to do it now, but clarify over time specifically that the terms of reveal and relay, the disclosure and the publication, I think there's a lot of details we can now add back in to what this means in terms of disclosing to customers what the terms are of the arrangement. And I think customers should definitely know about reveal and relay. And this will probably be as much educational and informational for customers as anything else. Thanks.
Appreciate it, particularly providing an example of when I said early on we've probably learned things that would be worthwhile down the line. No, we learned things down the line that would be worthwhile when we went back. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve. I agree with Kathy, but just to say that, of course, what we're doing in E and F is setting minimum standards for reveal and relay. Relay and disclose. There may be other policies that a particular provider has, of course. But again, just to say that this is all covered by the interim specification. Now, how that's been implemented is maybe another question, and it may be that the fact that the provider publishes on its website the circumstances under which it will relay communications from third parties to the customer, that's what the interim specification requires. Maybe we want to say they should send that, you know, tell the customer directly or something, but all I'm saying is that we have a baseline here that we need to take into account. Thanks.
Yeah, a good point. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just want to go back to Kathy's thought about using a different term. To me, POS is kind of standard. I would use it in the registry context, too. But let's hold that for clarification, since we are going back and forth between registrar P2P. Let's see as we're writing if that doesn't help just clarify, remove confusion as people are reading. Is there any more we should add here? As Kathy suggested, I think we will have to revisit a little bit in terms of and if we need to specify the pieces that have to be discussed in these statements of POS, rights, responsibilities, obligations, however we want to phrase it. Now, Kathy, can you just, and maybe I missed something here, what do you mean telling the customer directly? You're laying it out in the TOS or some different communication?
Hi, this is Kathy. Steve was mentioning different possibilities, I think, after my comment. So on a website or in the registration agreement with the proxy privacy provider. So I was just mentioning whatever way it is, it would be great to tell the customer directly, not necessarily on a website or a link, but kind of putting it in front of the customer when he or she signs up for the proxy privacy service. That would be my preference. Thanks.
Okay. Let me just add this for call notes, and I'll call on Stephanie. I guess my question is, if people are signing up direct, if people do their sign-ups through web forms, I mean, as I've done when I've registered domains and when I registered my privacy registration, not proxy, it's going to be web-based regardless. So we'll have to just focus on how we would phrase that when the time comes. Stephanie?
I know that all the registrars deal with the typical dumb consumer, of which I'm a great example. So I don't mean to be claiming the only ground here of understanding what the dumb consumer thinks. But we do tend to forget at ICANN that most people don't understand the domain name system whatsoever. The average consumer could not anticipate why anybody would want to know their who is information and under what circumstances that information might be revealed. So I think that what is missing in the sort of website approach to things, other than marketing for the service, is examples of when information will be revealed, scenarios, as it were. And so I would say that there is a consumer education duty on the part of providers that we need to enforce. So what that means in practice is the website's not enough. You can't just sort of shop around and say, oh, gee, this sounds good. You need to be informed when you pick a package on your little web form. Okay, you signed up for the Gold Deluxe privacy proxy service. That means when this happens, we'll do that. When that happens, we'll do this. And when this other horrible thing happens, we'll do the following. That's what I mean by it's a positive explanation as opposed to passive.
Okay. Let me just suggest, I'm not sure how many people who register for domain names think either way about whether they're going to the information is going to be published or not.
That's why we need this so badly, because the average person that I meet in my village at the feed store gets a domain name, has no clue, none, you know?
Right. No, that's my point. No clue either way. Michele?
Thanks, Michele, for the record. Stephanie, I have to disagree with you. I really do. I mean, if I go to a website and I buy an electric drill, is the person selling me the drill going to walk me through how to use the drill, or they're just going to sell me the drill? I think they're just going to sell me the drill. And it's the same with a lot of other things. I mean, ultimately, it's up to you as the person buying the service to inform yourself as to what you're buying. And I just think, you know, that it's, you've got, what end up happening, to follow what you're asking for to its kind of logical conclusion, is that for somebody to sign up for a service, they're going to have to spend 20 minutes going through a lot of stuff, and all they're going to end up saying is, oh, for God's sake, why do I have to read all this rubbish? I don't care. Just let me register the domain name and buy a service. Now, that doesn't mean that consumer education isn't important. I think consumer education is important. I just don't think it's up to us to go to that kind of extreme length. I mean, it's, you know, there's plenty of people out there who will say, you know, provider X does a particular thing well, provider Z does it badly. And I think those are the ones where people are going to go. And, you know, that's how it should be handled. I don't see why I would have to, you know, force people to go through some kind of long, convoluted explanation of what they're going to do and not do, when 9 times out of 10 they probably don't really care. And the ones who do care would probably be quite happy to read a long list of terms and conditions. Thanks.
Okay, James, and I'd really like to move on to C. You know, I really don't know how what we're talking about here is any different from, you know, putting all the contract specs online, as is currently done, and assuming people will read them. We can't force it. Or can we force it? Are we going to suggest, as, you know, taking some discussions from privacy policies, some kind of an affirmative obligation, not even privacy policies, licenses, an affirmative obligation to read, and if you don't scroll to the end and check, you can't go forward. You know, so some possibilities, but I'm still a little confused on how we can do more than just put every possible contract term out there, which I think responsible folks generally do as it is. James?
Hi, Don. James speaking for the transcript. So I think that what we're already talking about here in our preliminary conclusions will address Stephanie's concerns. I tend to agree with McKelly. We struggled with this in the post-exploration policy working group, and what we arrived at was essentially that the service provider needs to put their procedures in a place where they can get them, either on their terms of service or in their help files, but just putting them and forcing someone to click a button or check a box in order to get a service is just kind of feeding the iTunes update mentality, or whatever we want to call it, where essentially people just learn that they've got to just, they got to click that button, and they don't really read what's behind the button. And I don't know that we're going to solve that here. It is something that I think all service providers struggle with. I do tend to agree that while common registrants, typical registrants, aren't concerned about these issues, that a customer that is investigating and seeking a privacy proxy service is probably more aware of these issues and more concerned about how those things will be handled, and therefore is more likely to seek out those materials without the service provider having to spoon feed those. So that's just my my views on this. I think that we've got it covered, and I think that we can build off of what we've done in other PDPs. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Stephanie?
I would just like to say that what I'm looking for is some kind of parity in the obligations, and we're putting a lot of emphasis on updating information and, you know, your website will be taken down if this don't happen. And there needs to be parity on the right side. That's all I'm saying. in response to McKaylee, yes, spoon feeding is always resisted in a consumer education role, but we do it particularly where the end consumer is not in control of the situation. In other words, the chainsaw example or the drill example, they now have compulsory warnings saying don't drill your foot, wear safety boots, buy yourself a DeWalt heavy duty drill and just see how much spoon feeding you are obliged to provide to the consumer now. It gets stronger depending on the degree of control the consumer has. And I think here we have a situation where once that consumer buys that website, they're out of control in terms of the personal information being provided to people. That's the issue.
Okay, I'm going to toss in one thought and then we'll move on to C, which is that I think McKaylee mentioned James mentioned cost benefit. And I'd love to see a cost-benefit analysis of telling somebody that having to write down that you really should not use a chainsaw near your foot, knowing somebody who did. It wasn't as hideous as it could have been, but it wasn't pretty either. My point is a lot. The cost-benefit concept, I think, also works in terms of what warnings really accomplish. Moving on to C, and this is one area where we do have division. Very briefly, I think what we came to on the issue of categories of who can or can't use privacy proxy, we went through the traditional, or not traditional, but common distinction, commercial versus non-commercial, and had some examples where commercial entities use privacy proxy for valid reasons, the intellectual property situation in particular was mentioned. Where there might be trade secrets, or a product under development, where it's useful to have the domain name up front, but you don't want to identify the registrant until the product is out there. Then we got to there should be categories for domains that conduct business online, transactions online. Or we have what I think fairly was the majority position that there should be no distinctions. Anybody who wants to have a privacy proxy registration should be eligible to do it. I think that's a fair summary. And I'll open the floor. McKaylee?
McKaylee, for the record, what's the question exactly, sorry?
The question is, let's discuss the options here. And I think I summarized where we are, but it's time for us to see if we can come to some agreement on if that's where we are, or even come to some wording that'll create a full consensus.
Okay, well, I don't think we're going to get full consensus, since I suspect some people would disagree with what some of us would agree to. Personally, I think that privacy proxy should be open to everybody. Thanks.
Okay. Any other thoughts? Are we going to be stuck with, not stuck, that's the wrong way to put it. James?
So I agree with McKelly, not surprising. I think for a couple of reasons. One is that I'm not aware of any situations where a prohibiting a certain category of user would somehow have benefits. You know, if it's a transactional component, I think there are other ways to guard against that being abused, either through payment gateways or SSL certificates, more appropriately, and certainly doesn't outweigh the desire and the utility, and probably, and I don't need to use the word right here, but probably the privilege of commercial entities using these services for all the legitimate and valid reasons that we discussed previously. But I think just on a more principled point, you know, this would be the first, at least in the gTLD space, this would be the first foray, if we were to go the other direction, where we would be saying that there are different types of registrants and some have different privileges and access to different levels of service than others. And I just generally maybe have concerns over that being sort of an unprecedented area to wade into, particularly given that my company is focused on small business users, micro business users, who usually start out as individuals, but then, you know, aspire to be something more and to grow a business online. So I think just generally the idea of creating categories for any, in the context of any policy, is concerning to me. Thanks.
McKaylee?
Thanks. Just following up on this, I think this concept of, you know, categories and everything else, I mean, if a registry operator wants to create specific rules and categories and disallow different types of services associated with its namespace, then that's something which is up to the up to the registry to do by themselves. I mean, because, you know, people will say, you know, but registry X allows this or registry Y doesn't allow that. But that's at a registry level. What we're talking about here is at a GNSO across all GTLDs level, which is significantly different. So, for example, Dom, your employer is behind .ngo. And the other one, which I can never remember, ONG, which will have a whole range of specific registration policies, will only be open to certain entities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a whole bunch of those things happening in the new TLD space, but that's at a per registry level. So, you know, if a registry operator wants to do something, they can. We just got to bear in mind that what we're talking about here within this group is across the board for all TLDs, and that's something. It's a very different responsibility. Thank you.
Okay, good point. Yes, we will be differentiating NGO and ONG. Basically, you're eligible, you're not. We are at 11, actually, a minute after. Let's start next week again with this question. I'm hoping there'll be some people on the call who were in favor of the transactional distinction. I think we can get through the rest of C fairly quickly. I will point out that C3 kind of circles back to the discussion of what's to be displayed. So we'll have to resolve any conflict there. As always, thanks for your time. Talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Andre, if you can please stop the recording.